the big beautiful bill and weird things that are in it that nobody's talking about. And Duolingo fires AI.
AI in the courtroom. And Taylor Swift. Welcome to Downsampled News. Hello and welcome to Downsampled News. My name is Belock and I'm here with my father, Richie.
Hello.
Richie B. I'm sorry.
Richie B.
Richie B.
Yeah. The Big B.
Big B, and today we're going to be big, beautiful billing. Well, lots of B's this episode. So today is May 31st, right?
Yes.
Okay, today is May 31st, and we are covering stories from May, some of which are a little bit older, some of which just happened.
Right.
So what is your first topic that you're bringing to us today?
So my first topic is what's been called the Big Beautiful Bill. This is a large bill that was passed in the House that's supposed to set the budget for the near future for the United States. But this bill is packed with some strange things that don't really belong in the budgeting bills. And I'd like to just talk about some of those.
Why would you critique the Big Beautiful Bill? It's big and it's beautiful. Don't you know?
I'm grumpy.
Oh, yes. Grumpy old guitarist club. Yes, very much so.
So the first thing that people notice that is in this big, beautiful bill is that there's a repeal of taxes on gun silencers.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Right. So the gun silencers have been taxed pretty heavily since forever, since they were invented. So for over 100 years. And now, I guess there's too much gun noise in the United States, so they want to make it easier to get gun silencers to silence the guns.
They want to make your mass shootings quieter, just less disturbing.
Right. There's a number of changes to funding for healthcare in this, sadly. Mm-hmm. And like one of the things that people haven't really mentioned, but Planned Parenthood essentially would get defunded.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about that.
Right.
Okay. Which, like, for the record, like, Planned Parenthood is not just, like, providing abortion care, which is healthcare, but they provide, like, overwhelmingly just healthcare for women.
For women, right.
Who have, like, who don't have access.
Cancer screenings, prenatal care, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. When Planned Parenthood provides abortions, we already have laws on the books that no public money can be used to fund the abortions. So the money that they use for abortions is money that's donated to Planned Parenthood. It's not taxable money, not tax money. Mm-hmm. The problem with money is that, you know, one kind of money is...
It's fungible, right, yeah. So.
Another thing that's in this bill that is really, I guess I would say bad, is super increase in funding for ICE.
Oh, for immigration?
Okay. Yeah, for immigration. But I mean, it's just like triple the budget, including... They want to give $40,000 bonuses to every person who works at ICE.
Why?
So they can find the immigrants. Yeah. So you've probably heard about Medicaid and how they're trying to reduce, add some new rules about who can get Medicaid. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they're removing from Medicaid is any kind of trans-related healthcare.
Yeah, yeah. It's really unfortunate that there's such an attack on, and now today on the eve of Pride Month, you know, the attack on trans people in the United States is really unfortunate and dangerous, because there are trans people, just think about it, who have already transitioned and who rely on having access to like whatever hormone it is they need or medication they need, and like taking that away does not like make them not trans. You're just hurting people. So. But I'm sure all of this is good, because I'm sure it'll reduce the deficit ultimately, right?
Don't get me started on that one. So the other interesting thing that was in there, which there's a section in it that will changes how courts will work.
Okay.
So basically,
oh, yes, I heard about
this. They want to say that courts are not allowed to enforce injunctions or restraining orders on government officials unless the plaintiff pays some kind of a bond. So in other words, any restrictions that have been or injunctions that have been issued against all the various executive orders would become invalid, and it's retroactive.
I really want to start this series on TikTok, maybe when I have some time, called Republicans Don't Care About the Constitution, because they just don't care. This is so unconstitutional.
Oh, I know.
Like, it's so, like, this particular provision is so unconstitutional.
Well, we'll talk about what happens to this bill in the Senate a little bit. So, another thing in there is a drill, baby, drill.
We got a drill. We haven't been drilling enough.
Basically prohibits courts from challenging drilling on mining development, right? Because often a company will come in someplace and say, we want to, you know, build a mine here. And people who live there say, no, we go to court.
People will say, I live here. My house is here. Yeah.
The funny part is that if you recall when we talked last month about, you know, Orange is the New Green.
Yes. Yes.
The industry in the United States, the oil industry, basically is not profitable unless a barrel of oil is about $60. So if we try to produce more oil, the price will fall down, go down, which means they will not make any money. So I don't think they want to spend money just to lose money. So we'll see where that goes.
That's a complicated thought that a Cheeto dictator does not have the capacity for.
There's a section in the bill to defund the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which means that the banks can cheat people again.
Make banks great again.
Yeah. In the time that this agency had existed, which is only a couple of years, I think it was created during Obama, they returned about $20 billion to people.
Yes, I saw that. They returned it to
right.
To
the so, victims. For example, banks have these overdraft fees. If you overdraw your checking account, they will charge you like $30. So even if you overdraw a checking account by like a dollar. And so CFPB was kind of stopping that kind of stuff. Same with credit card late payments and interest rates and things like that. Since we're talking about AI, there's a provision in this bill to forbid any state from doing any regulation of AI for the next 10 years.
Why? That's so weird. Why?
Because Sam Altman. I don't know.
Well, I guess because we need to make sure that everyone is free to post pictures of Trump as the Pope. Like that, we really need those pictures on Twitter.
Do you, being a TikToker, do you know about brain rot AI?
I know the phrase brain rot, but not brain rot AI. Is that something specific?
Yes.
Oh.
Basically.
Oh, no, I'm not hip with the kids. Oh, shit.
Right, yeah. I only found out about this recently. Yeah. This is the big Gen Z thing where they basically, there are tools that can create these little videos, which are, some of them are quite gross and disgusting, or based on text description. And then it posted all over TikTok. So latest one is Italian brain rot because they're using some Italian phrases and songs as the background.
Oh, and interesting.
So check it out. Another thing they want to do is change federal employment contracts to be at will.
Oh.
Which is, so people in private sector are often employed at will, which means that you can be fired at any time because...
With cause.
No. You can leave any time you want. So you can quit for no reason and you can also get fired for no reason.
Well, there's ways to sue, though, if you get fired because, like, you're black. There's ways to sue.
Well, yeah. But if you're not in a protected...
It's harder.
It's
than
complicated.
With government employment is different, yeah.
Yeah, government employment has been made much more secure, and they're trying to undo that. There's too many, you know, because we need people to screw in the little screws into the iPhones.
I can't wait to have my second job as screwing in the screws of iPhones.
They're planning to really reduce Pell Grants. So this is for people who have low incomes, go to college. And finally, all the tax credits that were added to in during Biden to spread the development of clean energy, take them out, cancel them, expire them. So no credit for tax credit for buying an electric car or getting solar panels or, you know, having companies build up clean energy. The funny part is that And the current energy, the amount of energy produced in the United States today, there's more energy produced with clean sources than with coal.
Yeah, of course.
That only just happened like a year ago.
Oh.
You know which state is very big in wind energy? Really big.
Like Kansas?
No.
I don't know. Which one?
Texas.
Oh, yeah. I guess Texas is big and open and there's a lot of space.
Yeah.
They must be killing all the birds, though. That's so unfortunate. No birds in Texas.
So those are just some of the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens to this bill now is that it will go to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate kind of has to write their own version of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Senate has this thing called the Byrd Rule, B-Y-R-D, after Senator Byrd.
Yes.
Which basically says, if you're doing a bill under this reconciliation process, which we can get into some other time, it only has to be with budget. So it has to be things that where you're allocating money,
mm-hmm.
right? And a lot of the things we mentioned have nothing to do with money, mm-hmm. allocating money, so it's very likely to get stripped out. So
yeah.
Senate will produce a version of this bill, and then we'll go to conference committee, so they have to fight through the House about what it's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Byrd Rule is just a Senate rule, and it can be overridden by majority, mm-hmm. just 30 majority, so Republicans can probably repeal it. They just changed some rule that basically will let them pass a law that says California is not allowed to regulate cars. Because mm-hmm. California emissions are different, you know, they're more stringent than, mm-hmm. than other places. Anyway, so that's...
I feel safer. No, but I mean, the because I've heard some reporting about it. I didn't know about some of the things you just brought up.
Mm-hmm.
What I find ironic about the whole thing is that they're taking away these variety of things, particularly the attack on Medicaid, Medicare. And it's going to, my understanding is the bill's going to increase the deficit.
Yes. Tremendous. Well, the reason is because
the whole
large
point.
Part of the bill is to cut taxes for people who have tons of money. Like mm-hmm. Elon Musk, for example, does not have enough money.
He doesn't. So, he needs to fill pools with it and swim in it. That's what he needs to do.
That's been done already for him.
Yeah. He needs more.
He needs more.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's the thing is it's like, the Republican Party spends like my entire lifetime complaining about the deficit and complaining about spending and, oh my God, we're spending too much, et cetera, et cetera. We have to get the budget under control, which is not a bad goal to have.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come in and they finally have the chance to do it and they do this instead. And they say, just
but
kidding.
They've always been doing that. So the deficit is a problem only if Democrats are in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
When
was the last time we had a surplus? Was it Clinton?
Well, there's debt and there's a budget surplus or deficit. So
mm-hmm.
We've always had debt and it's been growing tremendously lately.
Mm-hmm.
And we should get into this some other time. But one thing that people don't quite understand, debt of the government is not like debt of the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because government can create money.
Right.
So they're never going to run out of money. Mm-hmm. It's the question is, how you manage how much money exists,
mm.
right? Because the too much money exists, you wind up getting inflation.
Right.
And if you don't get enough money created, then other bad things can happen.
Right. This is why you can't actually just keep printing money.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be bad.
But, you know, the joke I tell people, it's like, you know, the United States can't run out of money, just like NFL cannot run out of points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. I like that. Well, the big, beautiful bill, it is big and beautiful, and we love it.
So we'll see what happens in the Senate this next couple of weeks and what shape this bill would get in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw the Joni Ernst, who's a senator from Iowa.
Yeah.
She was in the news recently because people said we're upset about cuts to Medicaid, potential cuts to Medicaid. And somebody said, you know, people will die. And she says, well, we're all going to die.
Yep.
but also somebody asked about these judicial changes
mm-hmm.
To the bill and said, are you going to vote for it if that thing is still in there? And she just gave a lecture about the Byrd Rule without mm-hmm. answering the question.
Wow.
That's typical. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great. The big, beautiful bill. Fantastic. Okay, so my topic is about AI, because we seem to be doing that every month. Now, man, there's a lot of stories coming out about AI, but there's a recent development in AI that I think is almost more insidious than like the AI images that we see in the AI videos, which is AI of people's voices. Because it's really hard to tell when it's AI as a voice. Supposedly, like images, you can like, I can tell when something's an AI image at
Have
least.
you seen Terminator 2?
No, I have not seen Terminator 2. Are there AI voices in that?
Yeah, there's the AI that you know, the Terminator pretends to be somebody else, and that.
I was just watching the episode of Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where Worf gets tricked by someone mimicking Odo's voice or something, or vice versa, or something like that, for
Interesting.
like, and like gives a security code over because of that. And I was like, the AI, it's on DS9. So there's been some recently two interesting AI voice things that happened. One was a few months ago about the murder of Gabby Petito. Do you remember this murder case?
No.
It happened a few years ago. Gabby Petito was murdered by her boyfriend, who then killed himself. And there was a Netflix documentary about it. And part of what they did in the Netflix documentary was they had like letters and diary entries written by Gabby. And they had a ton of footage of her because she was like an online influencer. She did like TikToks and Instagram and all these things. So there's all of this footage of her and all of these recordings of her voice. So Netflix, with the permission of the family, as part of making the documentary, used the data of her voice and her recordings and took the diary entries and had the AI read her diary entries in her voice, which I thought was like so creepy. Because I'm like, this is a, like, we're hearing a dead person's voice reading something that they wrote. It was very strange. But that was just in a documentary context. It was kind of like interesting. But like, kind of weird. Now we have it coming up in court cases. So the first one that happened was a case out of Arizona. It's a murder case. A man was killed in a road rage incident, and we'll circle back to this. So the defendant was tried and convicted of murdering the victim. So a jury found him guilty. Then they go to what's called sentencing. Now, sentencing is when the judge decides what you're actually going to serve, whether you're going to prison, if so, for how long, that kind of stuff. And judges are required to take into account a lot of factors. Now, judges are not supposed to be like legal robots that just like apply factors or whatever. They're supposed to consider,
The judges.
yeah, they're supposed to consider the entire case, which means considering all, the facts of the trial that they saw. But also considering all of the facts about the defendant and the victim, right? That they have to take the defendant as a whole person, not just as what happened in the case. So at sentencing, you argue a lot about what the correct time is. So the man in this case got 10 and a half years as a sentence for a manslaughter murder charge, which sounds like out in Arizona, that's right around the right number. That's like the number you get for that kind of charge, that kind of conviction. At sentencing, the sister of the victim presented a video with a voice of her dead brother reading in his voice a letter that she wrote that she said was what he would have said if he was still alive. And it was very, like, I forgive you, kind of, it's that kind of thing. Very nice, very, I love God, that kind of thing. Even though this bad thing happened to me, I still forgive you for it, and forgiveness is important. That kind of stuff, nice stuff. So the judge said that the video was very impactful to them and to the court in terms of determining a sentence. So now this is obviously going up on appeal, and the question is, can you do this? Because what we've just never seen it before. But my question as a defense attorney is this reliable evidence? Because in like the Gabby Petito case, she had diary entries she had written when she was alive that they then played with her voice. Creepy, but was in fact her words. This was words that the victim's family was claiming the victim would have said if the victim could have spoken, which is a big question mark about.
So what was the influence on the judge? Did he give him less of a sentence or more of a sentence?
It seems like more of a sentence. Like, so it's because the judge felt that the video really humanized the victim.
Oh, I see.
And was like much more sympathetic. Oh, yeah, it was hugely sympathetic to the victim. And so it gave a higher sentence, slightly higher. There's a range.
Mm-hmm, right.
But my kids, not to be like, you know, a negative Nancy, but as a criminal defense attorney, I've been in murder cases and I've had clients convicted of various kinds of murder. And I've heard the family speak at sentencing. And every time a family comes in at sentencing for a case where something really bad happened to their loved one, whether they're dead or not, they all say the same kind of stuff. You know, it's ruined our family, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's hurt someone we love, obviously. And then they always say really nice things about the person who was hurt, especially if they were dead. Because when somebody's dead, people say nice things about them. To the extent that family members say things that are not necessarily true about the decedent. Sometimes you get murdered because you're involved in things that are leading to your murder. By way of example, I had a murder case years and years ago that was caught on video where the victim attacked the defendant. The victim started the fight. It was undisputed. Defendant won because he had a weapon. But victim started. We all knew victim started it. And the victim was also high at the time and, you know, probably acting under the influence because of that. And when we got to sentencing and like the client was convicted of some kind of manslaughter, so like not a first degree murder, but right. some kind of like you killed somebody in a fight, you go to prison for a while kind of thing. And at sentencing, it was the same thing. It was the family saying the victim was the greatest person ever. He was so kind. He was never violent. He never did anything wrong in his life. And I'm like, you watched the video? He started it. What are you talking about? And like, because we had the video, the judge was able, you know, the family gets to speak and it's part of their healing process and closure. And that's important. That's an important part of sentencing. But because we had the surveillance video, it wasn't like the judge was like bamboozled. And thought like, oh, this person really was so peaceful. Like the judge knew the victim also had a criminal record and was the one that began the violent encounter and all these things. And was able to weigh that as part of sentencing, which is what judges are supposed to do. Like I said, they have to consider everything about the defendant and everything about the victim. Positive, negative, neutral, whatever. I worry about these AI kind of things because for all I know, the poor man who was killed in this Arizona case really was like lovely. Like he could have been like, an like absolute saint, like totally not at fault. I don't know anything about the case other than that he was killed
right.
and that it was a road rage incident. But it could be the other way. It could be that maybe he instigated it. Maybe he, you know, did something that, you know, would change your view of what caused the crime to happen. And this is not to be like victim blaming. What I'm saying is judges are supposed to consider the actions of everyone involved and what led up to the crime, including what the victim was or wasn't doing. Those things change sentences. I think it's very hard to expect a judge to see an AI rendition of a dead person being like forgiving and being so kind and gentle and to not be like heavily impacted by that.
Well, you can even think like I said, there was a video of the murder that you were on trial involved with.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine nowadays I can generate video.
That's another issue, yeah.
So I can, you know, you can have the defense saying, this is what happened. Here's a video. Mm. And prosecution says, no, this is what happened. Here's the video.
Yes. So the way we protect against that so far is that whenever you bring in like digital evidence, you have to show the chain of custody right. and you have to lay Providence. The foundation for it. Yeah. So like, for example, you can't just in court bring in a screenshot of text messages and say like, look, this is the defendant's number. And he said, I committed the murder. Like you can't do that. You have to show like,
right.
you have to extract the cell phone. You have to bring in an expert to explain the extraction process. You have, and then the cell phone right. extraction gives you
That's
everything.
Good.
Yeah. No, there's the courts are set up to try to prevent like just straight up deception. But you know, what if the police are investigating, and a witness comes forward and says, I have a video of the fight, and they had already manipulated it. And so when they give it to police, police are like, we got it straight from, right. from them. We didn't manipulate it, but if some third party does, these are important questions. And the voice, the audio, I think, is going to be particularly concerning because there's also a lot of evidence in court that is like phone calls and
right.
secret intercept calls and that kind of thing. But yeah, the AI is getting, it's doing a lot. So it's something to keep an eye on. So they are appealing that case in Arizona. So we'll see where that goes.
Yep.
And if that becomes, if that becomes the kind of thing that is allowed to be used, I imagine that will spread like crazy all over the country. Where in these in these more serious cases, prosecutors' offices will be attempting to generate the AI statement of the victim from the grave, you know?
Do you ever watch Black Mirror?
No, I haven't watched Black Mirror. Is this a Black Mirror episode?
It is, actually. So I've watched just a handful of Black Mirror episodes, but there's one episode where there's a young couple and the husband mm-hmm. goes out driving in the rain and gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a company that takes all his emails and things like that and said, we'll use AI to generate, text messages. So you can chat with him.
Aww.
And then eventually they build a robot that comes and replaces him.
Yikes. Yikes.
Whenever I talk to people who design like products, especially in computers, I always tell, the joke is, imagine how your product would be used in the episode of Black Mirror.
How could this be a dystopia? Let's think about that. Well, that's definitely the voice AI is definitely, I think, very close to being there already.
Yeah. So the next topic is also related to AI.
I'm shocked. We are developing a niche.
I think we might get replaced by AI at some point.
Oh, no.
So there's been lots of talk about AI taking jobs and a lot of push, mostly from people who run companies that produce the AI tools.
Mm.
But so there's a company, an application called Duolingo, which is like a nice application that teaches you how to learn a new language.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a few months ago, they announced they're going full AI and they're going to replace a lot of the people who produce the materials for learning the various languages by AI.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was there's a tremendous backlash
yep.
from people who basically said, we don't want your AI slop.
Mm-hmm.
And Duolingo basically stepped back saying, oh, okay, no, we're not doing that.
Mm.
The one thing that nobody said, which is something that we talked about, is about copyright.
Mm.
Right. So if Duolingo would generate all the material using AI, all that material is not copyrightable under current law.
Yes.
So if I join Duolingo and I see lessons and stuff that are generated by AI, mm-hmm. you just copy them, post them on Reddit.
I don't know if their lessons are copyrightable anyway, because I would have to think harder about it. But there's certain things like, things that are processes, like explanations of processes, mm-hmm. cannot be copywritten.
But this is like tests and
yeah.
And well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a really good question. But there's other things on there too that definitely are copyrightable, like the images, the characters.
Right.
Like I used Duolingo for a long time to mm-hmm. try to learn Spanish. It didn't work. that's more on me though. But the Duolingo has characters. There's like,
right.
There's like the people, they interact with each other. Yeah, well, there's the owls, what stalks you.
Well, you can potentially generate the videos of people talking.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another company whose name, unfortunately, I lost, but basically they decided to replace the customer support with AI chatbot.
Oh.
And it turned out to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Going rehiring all the people who they fired. The mm-hmm. company lost money because people got disgusted with it.
Yeah.
In fact, I had an interaction with a chatbot just recently mm-hmm. because I got a new phone, and when I was going through the setup, something failed. The activation process failed, so I had to talk to Verizon. So mm-hmm. I talked to the chatbot briefly, who recommended to do all the things I already did, and yeah. none of them worked. So I finally said, you know, they sent me to a real person who said, oh, give me then the, you know, number of the phone. I did. And 5 minutes later, everything was working. So,
Yeah. I mean, there is definitely pushback against AI in whenever it affects like people's jobs or like creativity. Because like, I think there's definitely a space for AI, like for us to like make things easier. But I'm like, I don't want AI writing my book or my television show. I want AI screwing in the screws into the iPhone. That's what I want.
I don't know if you, the other kind of funny AI story, not quite related to jobs, but there was an article that was published in Chicago Times about, they have like an insert the beginning of the summer saying things you can do during the summer. And one of them was, here's your reading list for the summer. Here are some books you could read and enjoy. So I saw the article. One of the books was a book called Last Algorithm by Andrew Weir, who was the guy who wrote The Martian. I got all excited. Started searching for the book. Turned out the whole article is generated by AI, and all those books were made up.
He should write that, though. That sounds great.
Yeah, I know. So people were making fun of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so recently there was a story in Axios about how AI is coming for all the white collar jobs, and the problem with that is that the person who they interviewed to talk about it is the person who runs one of those big AI companies. I just saw today, I haven't read it yet, an article by Brian Merchant, who wrote the book of Luddites, kind of responding to that. Anyway, so I also saw an article where somebody did some analysis about what kind of productivity improvements you get from AI. And some companies said, not much, maybe 1 or 2%. And the other kind of interesting observation was, you know, AI as the generative AI tools that they're building, OpenAI and stuff, they're like pretty expensive to build and run. So you say, well, you want to replace all the graphic designers? Well, the graphic designer market is about $20 billion. And they spend more on these things too.
Yeah, like just have the person do it. Just have the person do it.
Anyway, so that's my semi-happy story.
So interesting thing about the AI, this is a big issue on TikTok, actually. This is a big topic of discussion on the talk with the children. So Duolingo like ruined their brand by doing that, because they had been, so I don't know if you know this, but Duolingo on the internet is like very chaotic. Like their main account is like run by a team of genius kind of marketers who like made the owl, like really leaned into the joke of the owl harassing you about studying and like really like leaned into like, you look outside your window and the owl is there, you know, like they like really did a good job for years. They built up this like wonderful brand that was like funny and chaotic and like a little weird, but was like super interesting. And their videos were always interesting and funny because of that. And yeah, with the AI thing, it immediately, like, I don't know why they thought that was going to be taken well, that they were like replacing a bunch of people with AI. And I read their like statement about it, and it wasn't as straightforward as like, we're replacing as many people as we can with AI. Like, they tried to phrase it in a kind of like, we're replacing things that like are more like rote or whatever, like to make it faster. And even so, people aren't interested.
People you know? Have very bad reaction.
Similarly, on Book Talk, where everybody talks about reading and writing, there's a debate among indie writers, so people who are writing books and self-publishing, about whether or not to use AI to make the cover art for your indie book. Because a lot of people are like, well, I can't draw, but I wrote my indie book and I want to publish it and I want there to be a cover and I'll just go to, you know, whip up a picture or whatever. And there's very strong opinions about that because people are like, just hire an artist or like learn how to use Photoshop. Like, it's not even that expensive. And you're, you know, stealing art, et cetera, from other people. So it's like the use of AI, I think properly, is being hotly debated and should continue to be hotly debated. And it seems like people don't like it.
Well, Google just had Google I/O, which is like a big conference where they announce new products and stuff. So they announced lots of cool products for AI, including some where you can make little movies from, you just describe it and makes a movie. And so what I saw on the internet, people have started making little movies with this tool of people saying, "I'm an AI."
Oh, that's
And
funny.
having emotional problems and stuff. So,
That's really funny. Well, I'm sure we will probably have more AI stories next month as
well,
well.
maybe there's a book I wanted to recommend if people are interested in this topic, and called AI Con. It's written by Emily Bender and Alex Hanna, and just came out. I've read it, and it kind of talks about a lot of the hype that's happening. And anyway.
AI. Okay, so my last topic, my fun topic, is Taylor Swift.
Ooh.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I like Taylor Swift a lot. Big Swiftie.
I heard you mention her once or twice.
Yeah, I did in fact go to the Eras Tour. This is my Taylor Swift mug. It has, well, not every album because I got this before she came out with Tortured Poets Department, but it has most of her albums as books and cats. It's
Oh,
very, isn't it cute?
yes.
Yeah. So yesterday, this is hot off the press. Yesterday, Taylor Swift finally successfully bought back the masters for her first six albums, which is a big deal. You should be excited. It's a big deal. Yes, there you go. So this is really interesting because it has to do with music law and the recording industry. And this is a big win, ultimately, not just for Taylor Swift, but also for artists in general. So I'll preface this by saying I took music law in school this last semester. It's really complicated. I got a B, so this is B level analysis. This is B for B lock. This is what you're getting, okay? It's complicated. You could look it up if you want. So Taylor Swift recorded her first six albums when signed to a record label called Big Machine Records. They're bad. We don't like Big Machine Records. She then switched labels. Now, one thing that people don't realize, I think, when it comes to professional music is that frequently, more often than not, actually, the actual artist does not own the master copy of the song. They don't really own the song. The way music royalties are calculated is the world's most complicated thing. And like music law, there's a difference, for example, between a sound recording and a musical composition. This doesn't make any sense to normal people, but anyway, so there's so many people, and when I was taking music law this past semester, I was always thinking to myself, like, why is this so complicated? What is the issue with music? And I don't know if you have thoughts on this, you're a musician. What I think is music is complicated in terms of figuring out who owns it because it's so intangible. It's not like a picture, you know, where you can see like who took the picture, or like a painting, like who painted what section, or a piece of clothing, who designed what element, you know, to know what percentage. There's, you know, you have your original songwriter who's writing your melody and maybe your lyrics, or maybe just your melody. But you have like your melody and your lyrics, then you have your like background music, but then you have the people that actually play the background music, and maybe they add stuff to it while like there's so many things that go into it. So Taylor Swift did not own her first, the Basics's. She did not own her first six albums. Big Machine Records did. And then there was an awful man named Scooter Braun. Do you know Scooter Braun?
No, but it sounds awful.
He's awful. He's bad. Bad guy. Scooter Braun was a like music manager.
Okay.
So he worked with like Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, I think maybe Katy Perry. I don't know. He worked with like all the big names like in pop, basically. And he worked with Taylor Swift for some time. And they had a falling out, and she basically was like, he was awful, he was like a bully, and he we only had bad interactions. She like really didn't like him. So she leaves Big Machine. She wants to buy her first six albums. They say no. Scooter Braun ends up acquiring the six albums. Like he has his own company and stuff like that. And he won't. This is also this is a very basic version. You can look it up if you want the details because it's super complicated. But basically, Scooter Braun ends up acquiring the rights to the first six albums, which means that while these songs are playing on radio, on television, on MTV, streaming, he's getting
Royalties.
most of the money from it. Taylor Swift is getting some, but he's getting most of the money from it because he's the one that owns it. And he also controls when and where it can be played. So she's trying to buy him back. He's saying no. He eventually sells the six albums to another company who, I believe that was Shamrock, and they've had it until now. And then they're the ones that now have sold it back to Taylor Swift. So one thing that happened in the middle of this was at the 2019, I think, AMAs, American Music Awards. It was 2018 or 2019. The AMAs were honoring Taylor Swift with being like Artist of the Decade, and they wanted her to perform. And she wanted to perform a medley of her best hits. But she couldn't because she didn't own them. And so what had happened was Big Machine said, you can't play any of these because it's being recorded. So there's a difference in rights in terms of live performance and recorded. Because AMAs is recorded and streamed, they said, but we're not giving you permission basically to do that. So then Taylor Swift posted that to Tumblr at the time and told everyone. And then Big Machine very quickly backed off and said, whoa, we never said you couldn't play your own song. So then she was able to play at the AMAs. And she gave a great performance. It was awesome. But that's the kind of thing where it's like there's like this big power differential. Even with someone like Taylor Swift at that time, who had just come out with her seventh album, who's like a really like established huge musician, still could not have control over her first six albums. So what had happened was Taylor Swift couldn't get anybody to sell her the original six. She kept offering money for them. They kept saying no because they were making so much money off of having them. So Taylor Swift waited out the contracts on them and did her re-recordings. So if you've seen the 1989 Taylor's version, Red Taylor's version, Fearless Taylor's version. What happened was she waited until the contract period allowed her to re-record them. And she actually got this idea from Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Kelly Clarkson like tweeted it at her like around the same time. She was like, you should re-record them. Like, I would listen to them. So of the six, as of today, Taylor has re-recorded and re-released four, which means and now all of her fans knew what was going on. So everyone immediately moved over to the Taylor's versions, stopped listening to the originals. And so the money they, I mean, this is my assumption, is that the money they were making, that the other company was making having the originals just plummeted because nobody
No.
was listening to them. And then now they finally, as of yesterday, officially sold them to her. We don't know for how much, but I'm hoping it was less than what she offered them in the past because they're worth less now. But whatever it was, she bought them back and now she has the rights to her music, to all of her music. So.
So, kind of somewhat related, I recently watched this movie documentary called Becoming Led Zeppelin, right? You know who Led Zeppelin was?
I'm aware of what I've heard the name, yeah.
So, the movie is basically about how Led Zeppelin came to be up through the first two albums when they became like a huge group. So, Jimmy Page was the one who started the guitar player, who started the band and kind of put it together. He decided. Basically, the group itself financed recording of their own album, the first album.
A lot of them do, yeah.
And he, there was a manager who used to manage a group, Yardbirds, that Jimmy Page was in. And Jimmy wanted to go to like America and went to Atlantic Records because he wanted them to be on Atlantic Records. And one of the conditions that he wanted, saying, is this is the tape, this is how you release it, there are no singles. And this is 1969, where singles were kind of a
The
big
thing,
deal,
yeah.
but he insisted, and that's what he got. And so that's kind of interesting. So they held the rights to the, he basically had the tapes. So at the time, they were using tapes. Led Zeppelin actually became big in the United States before they did like a tour of the United States to support the album and work on the second album as they were going through the United States, and they were hardly not even known in England. And eventually, of course, they became known, and then the movie ends with the big concert they give at Albert Hall, mm-hmm. which is in London. Anyway, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about, like, you see all these celebrity singers and think about, like, what they do and don't own. Like, a lot of them don't own those songs. Now, some people are just the recording artist. Like, they sing the song. Mm-hmm. Some people are the writer, the composer. Some people are both.
Well, so jazz is much more interesting in that way because in jazz, people play other songs and there's many interpretations, mm-hmm. right? So, like, for example, I have this idea of trying to record a CD of music by Thelonious Monk. Mm-hmm. And I would like to kind of properly release it. So I'm going to need your advice about, like, how mm-hmm. to pay for the rights to actually release the music.
It's online. It's easy. Yeah.
Interesting thing that happened, like, with the copyright of music is you can copyright the melody and words, but not the chords.
Yes, there's a lot of things in music you can't copyright because right. they're so basic. Yeah.
So which what happens in jazz, that there's something called, is it counterfactual, where people use given chord progression but make up a new melody. Mm-hmm. And there was, especially in 1940s, 1930s, jazz musicians just, you know, used to like to play certain songs mm-hmm. because of the chord progression. So they just made up new melodies. So there's tons of songs, like, you know, a typical one is I Got Rhythm, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
by George. There's about a million songs in jazz that use chord progressions from I Got Rhythm. Mm-hmm. So to the point where it's like, you know, you can go into jam sessions and say, okay, I Got Rhythm, B flat, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you play. And so there's, anyway, so that's the...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, as like I was saying before, about how complicated music is in comparison to other things that we... copyright and trademark mm-hmm. and patent. And I think it just has to do with, like, there's innately in the creation of music. I mean, it's not impossible for one person to do it all, but it's really hard for one person to be both the, like, composer of the melody and all the background music and the lyrics and then record it themselves and then produce it themselves and mix it. Like, all the pieces that
Prince.
Go into... I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying it's difficult. Well, even like Taylor Swift, one of her albums, I always get confused which one it is, so forgive me if I get the wrong one. I think it was Speak Now. She had gotten critique on her second album because she was so young at the time. People were like, oh, she's not writing the songs. Like some professional is writing it and they're giving it to her to sing, which is not uncommon. So people thought that, and, you know, they didn't believe her that she was the one writing them. So then when she did, I think it was in the third album, Speak Now, she wouldn't let anyone else write with her.
Oh.
She said, I'm going to be the sole credit of songwriter on every song on the album. And she wrote the whole album herself because she didn't want anyone to be saying, like, oh, well, you know, it's Taylor Swift and a real songwriter. So it's really a real songwriter.
So it's with Beatles and the Rolling Stones, all mm-hmm. that Zeppelin, like the Beatles, all the credit, basically McCartney, mm-hmm. Lennon McCartney.
Yeah.
Was like 90% of the songs. And because each one contributed, so... And mm-hmm. you could argue, but Led Zeppelin was Page and Plant, you know, the singer and Jimmy Page. With Stones, it's Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, mm-hmm. not every song. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing, too, about when you write works together, mm-hmm. it's not like, it's called a joint work, mm-hmm. you know. And not actually as fun as it sounds. So joint work sounds like it might be funner, but it's if two or more people... are each writing parts of a song with the intention of it being one song, then absent a contract otherwise, they both own equal parts of the song. Mm-hmm. So like if we wrote a song and you wrote the melody, you wrote the melody and I wrote the lyrics, mm-hmm. we both own 50% of the song. Even if there's like three lines of lyrics, we both own 50% of the song. You can contract around that in advance if you have, I'm sure, like, for example, someone like Taylor Swift, when she works with other people, she probably has her lawyers probably make contracts where she owns a bigger percentage, et cetera. Because that relates to then what kind of royalties you get and what you can do with it. Mm. So, yeah. So congratulations, Taylor Swift, for getting all your albums back. So now we can listen to them all guilt-free. All right. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us at Downsample News. If you want to find me elsewhere on the internet, check the description. And we'll see you at the end of June.
Right?
Yeah, bye.
Bye. Because I want to do some
podcast. Well, don't take it off yet. We got to say goodbye.
Oh.
We're filming. We're going. We're hopefully microphoning.